So we had these four loudspeakers ranging in price from $500 to $3,800. And we have this cool room where you go in and the computer starts up the test. You have a curtain here. You don't know what's behind the curtain. And there's a pneumatic speaker shuffler that puts each speaker in the exact same position. So we completely remove positional effects because every speaker's in the same position. So these are the individual groups. I'm just going to click through them. So these are the high school students, Japanese group number one, Japanese group number two, CalArts, the visual arts students, the Loyola Marymount students, and the UC Irvine. And the last group are the Harmon listeners. And you can see that regardless of training, age, whether they're Japanese or American, there's a pretty consistent preference here. The more trained listeners tend to rate things lower on the scale, and that's pretty consistent with every study I've ever done. People who are less trained tend to rate things higher, and their range tends to be smaller, so they're less discriminating. The nice thing about this is that these are the anechoic data, and you could pick the winners just looking at these graphs. So this is the Infinity speaker, very flat on axis, very smooth. This is a competitor speaker. The marketing department believes it should have a smiley face. But when the listeners hear it, it's the inverse. You'd have to flip it over. This is a speaker that's designed for very high efficiency in the mid-range, so when you go in the Best Buy, it's the loudest speaker on the floor. But listeners actually say it sounds thin, like a bookshelf speaker, because it's got the bass mid-range is 6 dB lower than the treble.
And with that jump.
This is what Floyd calls a waste of natural resources. It's got lots of resonances. It's very colorful, and there's no low bass. And when you go off axis, this is a speaker for it only sounds good in one spot. So it's for a divorced or bachelor audiophile who has no friends.
We're about to have
Now, are you going to identify which one's which?
Well,
you did it first.
Yeah, if you go back, that's the order. So, let me.
Oh, that's far it's done.
So, the reason I'm showing you this is that history repeats itself, and you know we've shown with speakers that it's good loudspeaker sound is pretty universal, whether you're trained, untrained, or from different countries. And so, why would it be different for headphones? Well. It's a good thing for marketing because I can just keep doing these studies over and over again. And yeah. 3 minutes. Can I make this in 3 minutes?
Excuse me, 2 minutes.
So this is a study that we haven't presented yet. It's going to be presented in a few weeks. Why are we doing this? Because, again, there's this hugely successful headphone. Which people believe is maybe related to the sound. I think it's related to celebrity and marketing. So we did this study in four different countries, and it's by no means a large sample that's balanced or anything like that. You want to stop and change your tape? Okay.
Well, we usually take a break, and people drink their water and stuff, and then go on a little bit after, maybe 20 minutes.
Do we have time?
We have time.
We're not going to work.
Okay, I can take a break. I only have about 5 more minutes, though.
That's okay.
Well, I
think we should finish the 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Come back with questions.
Can we switch your tape there real quick?
I think I should have a water.
Do any questions? Yes.
So I got a question while you're doing that. The headphone curve, I mean the flat target headphone curve has a big bump in the high end.
That's the resonance in the ear coupler, ear simulator. So whenever you measure a headphone on a real ear or an ear simulator, the ear canal has a resonance about 10 dB at around 3 kilohertz. So when you measure it and on an ear canal or an ear simulator, you're going to see that 10 dB bump.
So if you shot the headphone out into free air and stuck a microphone in front of it, you wouldn't see that?
You wouldn't see that big resonance.
Okay. We're good, Sean, to do that study.
And don't you see it move differently for open ear versus closed ear?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, the whole idea of the simulator is that it's also including the acoustic impedance that you'll experience when a headphone interacts with an ear. So with an open headphone, because it's open, there's very little interaction, but as you get a very tight sealed closed headphone, you're going to see some acoustical interaction between the impedance of the ear and the headphone. That's the argument. And there's been some papers showing that this does exist. It's a small effect, but it's measurable.
What about the differences individual to individual in the effective length, effective diameter, and shapes of the external auditory meatus?
There's lots of studies showing that above up to 1 or 2 kilohertz, it's very, you know, people's ear anatomy is very similar, but once you get above that frequency, there's a lot of variation. And that's one of the issues of these simulators, is that they're only really accurate up to 8 or 9 kilohertz.
I have a question.
Yeah.
About your test of the Martin Logans. They not only have a relatively narrow horizontal dispersion, but they also have an extremely narrow vertical sweet spot.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering, given your methodology for how your listener was set up and how the speaker was set up, did you take any steps to guarantee that the listener was actually sitting in the vertical sweet spot? Because just being off by a few degrees would have been shooting that high end right over their heads into their lap.
So when we use trained listeners, I mean, it's an interesting graph. Maybe I'll go back. Because... So this is the Martin Logan, and these groups of people were sitting all around the speaker. So one of them was sitting right on axis for that speaker. So you'd expect that maybe some people maybe preferred it, maybe not, depending on where they were sitting. These listeners are all trained listeners, and they did the test sitting exactly on axis in the same chair. So we didn't bring the trained people in as a group. They did it individually. And every one of them sat right in front of it on the sweet spot. And you can see that the trained listeners actually rated it lower.
Right. But what I'm saying is that particular speaker not only has a sweet spot in terms of being directly on axis horizontally,
mm-hmm.
but it has a very narrow sweet spot vertically.
Right.
And from your photograph, the distance that you're throwing, it would have been very easy if you were just off by a few degrees either way to be shooting the high end over their head or into their laps.
No, I mean I've heard this speaker probably 2,000 times because we always throw it in for demos, and you're right, it is very directional. But when you're sitting down, it sounds very bright. You get up, it sounds duller, and if you move slightly off axis, it gets really dull. And that's why I call it a speaker for an antisocial bachelor with no friends. Because there's only one sweet spot where it sounds, you know, bright. So I think this accurately reflects the listener's head in the sweet spot. The other people,
they have a very tiny head, don't they?
Well, there were, you know, up to 18 people in the room. So some of them were sitting close on axis, some of them are sitting far off. But the point is, if I think you should design a speaker so it sounds good everywhere. Isn't that the goal? Bring more happiness to more people? Yeah. So where were we? Oh, yeah. So we did this study, as I said, I did this in a matter of about 3 months. I took a trip to Canada after New York AES, and then we went back to Northridge, and we did some tests, and then we went to Farmington Hills in Michigan maybe a month later, and then I took a trip in November to China, and then in November I was in Germany right before Thanksgiving. So again, we use this virtualization method where we simulated three different headphones plus our target over this simulator headphone. And the ones we did was the Sennheiser, which is a really good headphone, highly regarded, the Audis, the very popular Beats, and then the Harman Target was based on the curve that we showed in our latest paper. And these are the listeners. As I said, this is wrong. It's a much larger number. It's in the 70s. But nonetheless, the ages were generally, we had some young people in the groups as well as some older ones, and definitely more males than females. I think it was 70 or 80, 20. And what we did was, To make the survey simple, we wrote an iPad application rather than hauling around audio gear. And we basically simulated the different headphones, and it allowed us to randomize them, and people could rate them on a 10-point scale. And they could give comments as well. We also did this method of adjustment with the bass and the treble as another experiment. I'm not going to present those results tonight because we haven't. That's going to be the next paper. But so we also have a measure of what the preferences are for bass and treble for 239 listeners from different countries. So that'll be an interesting study. So the overall preference, there was a preference for the Harman Target curve, and these are the three competitors. This is the Sennheiser, the Audis, and the Beats.
What was the first one?
This is the Sennheiser headphone equalized to our target curve, which is what we...
These were all the Sennheiser.
This was all played through a Sennheiser. We're virtualizing a Sennheiser, an Audis, and a Beats. And this is the Sennheiser equalized to our target. And we found that, as I said, it showed you in the headphone, in the speaker study, the less training you have, the higher you tend to rate things on the preference scale. So again, this was true for headphones as well. But not much of an effect between these different categories. And these categories were basically self-proclaimed. So we asked the listener, are you an experienced listener? Do you have little experience, a medium amount, or a lot? So...
Are those significant, those differences?
I think this is significant compared to these three, but these are not significant.
Yeah.
And these are the preferences as a function of experience. And again, there's you can see that they rate them slightly higher with less experience, but the overall trend is very similar. You just get more discrimination with trained listeners. So one of the questions I always get asked by our marketing people is, well, you use trained listeners. What's the person on the street going to like? And are their preferences different? And I think I can now say with headphones, If we design them to sound good to trained listeners, the general population is going to like them too. We don't have to have 50 varieties of ketchup or mustard. We just
what was your source material here?
It was we had some female vocal pop, some male vocal, and a classical piece.
And your trained listeners give you more consistent results.
Yeah.
Sean, on these listeners, I doubt very much, but I'm just curious whether or not they were actually given an audiology test just to see what kind of ears they had in terms of an audiology test.
So we do that for the trained listeners because they're in-house, and to be qualified as trained, you have to pass the audiometric test. So all the trained listeners have no more than 15 dB loss. So that eliminates all the live sound guys. All the guys from JBL Pro that did too many drugs and rock and roll. And yeah, JJ. And all the people over 50 or 55.
So who exactly was left?
The guys in the mailroom. So here's the results of the headphone preferences for the trained listeners. And these are all trained listeners from Harman. So the first set is Farmington Hills, Northridge, Germany, and China. So that's encouraging because it tells me that the training we're doing is pretty well making people respond the same. And we get a lot of, you wouldn't believe when you have an international company how many arguments you get with the Chinese and the Germans. And they're always saying, well, we know better what the Chinese customer wants. And it's very inefficient. If you have data like this that can show that everyone likes the same sound, it you can save a lot of time and money. But you could argue, well, these are all trained Harman people. They've all been trained to respond like soldiers or whatever. What happens if the people aren't trained? So these are the untrained listeners. And you can see that there's more noise in the data, but regardless of whether they're from U.S., Germany, Canada, or China, that there's a pretty consistent preference for this target. Not always much more preferred. And there's clearly something about the beats that they don't like.
Might be the sound quality.
So in the untrained, there's a couple of...